So what was really important to me is that when I started in school, because my coach came into our school, I did its PGCSE and I kind of just progressed from there. I had my friends who are from the same context as me. We understand each other in a different way. So when we would go to competitions, I had that kind of familiarity and I had that encouragement and we know where we were coming from. And that is so important to me. That I have people that understand our context because I'm really big on understanding culture. And I think that if you don't understand an individual's culture, you can't support them.
British weightlifter Mercy Brown has been on an extensive journey in her sporting career, but the comeback is on. The 26-year-old Londoner is an exciting talent and secured gold in the 2022 British Weightlifting Championships, but a year after that didn't pan out as expected. Throughout her rollercoaster ride in the sport, there have had to be breaks for Mercy to prioritise her own self-care and mental well-being. There is no substitute for looking after yourself as best as you can. She also admits in this podcast episode about how tough it has been losing her coach after so many years, after he passed away. But what shines from Mercy throughout this interview is how much she cares and how important it is to give back. Whether it's helping to support her own Afro-Caribbean community, or looking to change the nonsensical stereotype that strength sports are masculine, she has that inner drive to make a difference. That's part of what has seen her become a member of the Women's Sport Trust's famed Unlocked programme, and she's now a firm fixture in what she calls an army of people looking to change women's sport for the better. Going forward now is where the comeback comes in. Tournaments are booked in and Mercy is ready to get competing regularly again. While she admits she's nearer the end of her career than she is to the start, she is determined to give her absolute all in the next couple of years. And with the talent and commitment that she has, watch this space. Mercy, a very warm welcome to the show. As ever, we have huge appreciation for our guests taking the time out to speak to us. How is everything at the moment?
Everything's going good. Life is going really well at the moment. I'm focusing more on training and just working out life around that part right now. So it's going really good.
Yeah, good to hear. And like I say, part of the big questions, kind of juggling everything. And obviously you're a very, very busy person as well and trying to balance things out. I'll start with kind of 2022 as a whole, really, because there was one Instagram post that kind of piqued my attention on your account, where you're quite reflective about the year, really, and how you know, didn't think that you, how you thought that you compete a little bit more, but that's essentially how life goes. So how do you kind of look back on that year? And now that we are 3 months into 2023, as we record, where sport is going for you right now?
I think for me, last year, the ambition was to compete a lot more frequently. So it was about getting more and more back into that quote unquote full-time kind of athlete life. But I think there's just normal hurdles that you go through, especially as unfunded and especially because I'm not at the elite level where I'm competing internationally regularly. I'm receiving funding. I'm actually working my way back up the stages. So it is a self-funded journey. And I think when you are self-funded, you have to be very realistic about what you prioritize. So last year, financially, I had to prioritize a lot of different life like situations as opposed to competitions. I did have several kind of pinned comps that I was going to do regardless, but it was a bit out of my control. So I did the British champs at the beginning of the year, which was phenomenal. I think gave me that wake up call that there's still potential, because sometimes you take a break or you have these roller coasters of highs and lows, and then you think, is this the right time to retire? And I think that showed me that it wasn't, because I PB'd, did some of my best lifts I've ever done in my whole career, and was doing literally the bare minimum. So I was like, I'm going to compete. And I was supposed to go out to Luxembourg. And we got to City Airport and they just didn't let us on the flight due to, we needed to show like COVID passports and stuff. Despite the website saying we didn't need to, we checked, we planned meticulously. And we just encountered someone at the airport that just wouldn't let us get on the plane. So that was another big opportunity that was missed as well. And then just life kind of took a big whirlwind last year, especially towards the end of the year, where I kind of just had to sit back and be like, I cannot give my attention to weightlifting. I kind of got to take some time, self-care, well-being, and making sure that I can actually function to be able to give my best self to the sport.
In terms of that self-care side of things, was it just too much was going on at the exact same time and it was really having to kind of strip things back and focus on yourself rather than getting swamped with so many things on the go?
Yeah, I think with like lots going on at one time, it's like this, you've got personal life, you've got working life, then you've got sporting life. And I think that when there is a precedent of obviously trying to make sure that you can live and survive and like you have money to pay your bills, you have a job, like all of those sorts of security factors that you need, like I would weigh up going to training, especially for the level that I'm at the moment, where it's like it doesn't require me just yet to give myself full time to this, and I also don't have the facility to give myself full time to this, so I need to make sure that I have the kind of basic necessities and basic lifestyle factors down and pinned down as a foundation, so that when I do go back I can just dedicate my focus. And literally as I planned it is actually how it went. I prioritized certain personal life factors. I had to move houses, things like that, and it now works out miles better for me to focus on training. And for the beginning of this year, I've been able to come back into it and just focus, increase the amount of times I'm training as well, and also enter more competitions. So from next week, I've got a comp next week, comp the week after, and a competition at the end of the month. And that will be more comps in a month than I did across the last 2 to 3 years. So yeah, coming back has been good, and setting those foundations has been really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, it's put yourself into a much better position now.
Yeah,
it, kind of that when you go back to the British Champs last year, as you were saying, in PB and kind of realizing that the potential is still there, is that almost like a little bit of a tussle in your mind, because you really want to fulfill that potential, but at the same time you've got to look after yourself as well, and that might involve stepping back from it?
Yeah, it is a big tussle, but I think for me, what I found quite early on, because when I started weightlifting, I had a very kind of big block of my life where I just did weightlifting and I just competed and I just flew everywhere. And at one point I took a break and I realized those breaks and checkpoints for me are really, really important. So where some athletes are able to go throughout their whole career taking minimal breaks, I'm not opposed to taking a 3-month break. In one case, I took a year break, because I feel like those regrouping moments give me longevity. So I took my first break 2016, and I think that's after we tried to go for the Rio qualification. So I started at 15. I've like kind of accelerated really, really fast in my career. I've now won medals across all the age group levels. I've now got a senior medal. I've got a world junior medal. I'm trying to go to the Olympics. And that in itself is a big toll. And I remember we took a massive break. And when I came back from that break, it was great, because it's like, okay, I have to regroup. Yes, life changed a bit, which meant my career changed a bit. But from there, I just kind of, it's forced me to be a lot more reflective about where I am at. So now if I sense that I need a break, I won't kind of give myself half-heartedly to training and try to just do something. I'll take the break that I need, sort out what I need to sort out, and then come back and just absolutely nail it, which is the best approach for me.
Yeah, and like pointing back to that Instagram post that I referenced as well, and you also mentioned that a lot has changed for the better. And I suppose in terms of learning about yourself and developing and discovering things about yourself, is that kind of on those lines that you're talking about? Just, you know, realizing when you might need a break, or just how to kind of manage everything, I suppose.
I think that reflection came off the back of, I've had to deal with some really big personal things. And I would venture to say that I'm in the best position of my life now and the way my life is, which means that I can give myself more to things that I'm passionate about. Whereas before, there was always a condition. So for example, when I was teaching, there's always the precedent that I've got other people in my care that take priority since I'm committed to this role. When I was doing other things, it's like that actually takes priority. And I think, again, with now moving and now freelancing and doing things like that, there's been a kind of ecosystem that I've created that has to kind of breed success. And I think if it doesn't, that would be on my shoulders individually, not any other factor that's kind of pulling at me. So that was a really big reflection. And I think another big reflection from that was that the transition of losing my coach was something that I don't think I've yet really dealt with. So it's a bit like you're lost, and where you would have that person who has been with you, because I was one of those athletes, I stuck with my coach from my coach when I started was my coach right up until he passed away. And you get to these points where we would normally like sit down and have these conversations that, ah, damn, I can't call him, can't speak to him, don't know what to do next. So I think, yeah, I needed that break again, 2022 after the British, because it was like, I've done this, this is incredible, but I don't know what to do next. And I think now I've got a lot clearer. He wrote some letters to me when, like back in the day as well. And I read those, I go through my old programs, I just try to work out the pattern. And I think I've got it locked down now. And the people around me that I have helping me out, they are very open to learning that style of coaching and that way and that method to be able to support me without minimal disruption. Because I think if I really reflect on it, like I'm not going to be able to do what I need to do.
Mm-hmm. Is there, like I say, still trying to come to terms with that? Is there an element that you're trying to find, I don't know, that other voice in your corner, that other role model to try and help guide you a little bit?
Not really. I think with what my coach brought to the table, if I'm being completely honest, I'm not really going to find, there are things that are similar, but not exactly like him. He was a Commonwealth Games medalist and Olympian at the Tokyo 64 Olympics. He had records, 50 years of experience, like that's phenomenal. And he had a team of lifters that looks like me. He came into environments, in my school and things like that. And I had teammates that were like me, similar context, similar background. And my start was very fortunate because of the type of coach that I had. And I think I would do myself a disservice trying to find something that looks exactly like my coach. And I think what I'm looking for now, because I've been doing this, 11 years now. And one of the really big things with my coach, he taught us beyond weightlifting. He taught us about coaching. He taught us about being referees. He taught us about discipline. And I know what I need to know, but you never hear of an Olympian that's self-coached or a senior level athlete that's just coached themselves and just been an island. You need a village. So with my village, it's really important that whoever I invite into my space facilitates that safe space for me to ask questions, to learn, to make mistakes, and just not to be like bollocked. Because you find that some coaches, some nutritionists, some like whatever support style, they just don't work for you. So for me, I'm not looking for a duplicate of my coach. I think I'm looking for certain characteristics in different individuals, which I think I've built out quite well. There's still some gaps, definitely. But I think for me, it's taking that precaution as well to make sure that those that I invite into this journey, especially this new chapter, have to be aligned with my goals and values so that we can do our best, honestly.
In terms of those goals and values, what are those key principles that are kind of guiding you?
One of the key principles for me is that at no point should I like feel like I'm being told off. And I've noticed that approach, a lot of like practitioners use that approach of like that tough love approach. And you have to know who that works with, because I switch off pretty easily, because sometimes tough love doesn't come across as love. It just comes across as tough and it comes across as mean. So for me, where I recognize that I do have sensitivity to words, I can't have people around me that are very loose with their words or loose with their criticism. I need someone that can think about what they've said, be honest, but think about the delivery. And I think sometimes in the past where I have tried to invite different people in, the way they've spoken about certain things just doesn't put me at ease. And that's why I'm very selective about who coaches me at competitions, the environments I train at, because it's all good and well having an opinion, but you need to understand how your opinion can either affirm someone or discourage someone. So for me, words are very, very important. And I think the willingness to learn as well. If I'm working with someone and I can like just sense that they feel like they know it all, I'm not interested, because we don't know it all. And that's why I've looked for help. And that's why someone is willing to work with me, because working with me will be a different experience to working with another athlete. And you have to take it case by case. So my team is pretty much built out with people that they are my safe space. If there's an issue, especially in a sport where you have to make weight, so there are sensitive topics, I can talk to them, but they'll also be very honest about, okay, do you know what, Mercy? You're doing great in this area, but I think we can improve in this area by doing X, Y, Z. They come with solutions. They come with affirmations and acknowledgements of my hard work. And we build out from there, because I see my gifting in weightlifting as a God-given gift. So I'm good at it. But to be great at it, I now have to apply disciplines that look a little bit different to someone that might have to work a bit harder than I am to do just the basic principles of lifting. So yeah, tough love is just not going to work, because I can weightlift quite well with minimal guidance, but I'm looking at being an Olympian. I'm looking at getting more senior medals. I need to now refine the gifting and execute it with excellence. So yeah, those are my kind of key principles and values.
Yeah. And I was going to bring these questions in later on, but kind of since we're on the topic and you mentioned there about, you know, that your old coach's team looking like you, you know, that same kind of background, and I suppose feeling that sense of community at the same time. Mm. How important has that been to kind of, I suppose, developing you into the person you are?
It's been huge. I think there's an issue of diversity across all sports, but I can only speak on the sport that I'm in. Yes, there are people that look like me, but there's not a lot of them. And the higher up you go, the less they look like you. So it's really hard to kind of look at someone like, oh, I can do it because they did it. So what was really important to me is that when I started in school, because my coach came into our school, I did it as PGCSE, and I kind of just progressed from there. I had my friends who are from the same context as me. We understand each other in a different way. So when we would go to competitions, I had that kind of familiarity and I had that encouragement, and we know where we were coming from. And that is so important to me, that I have people that understand our context, because I'm really big on understanding culture. And I think that if you don't understand an individual's culture, you can't support them and you can't uplift them in the best way. You might be able to add some value, but you won't add the maximum value that person needs. And I think when my coach began to introduce me to other phenomenal Black lifters, like, I was completely like blown away. And I think one of the things that really, really touched my heart is that they took me under their wing and they taught me about the sport. They gave me a perspective that is like, we get this because we're similar. Like, we have shared lived experiences. And although, yes, sport can be quite a shared experience, you encounter and interact with things in different ways. And I think they brought a lot of clarity to things. And especially like being in a weight-making sport, I'm from an Afro-Caribbean background, when my mum is Nigerian and my dad is Grenadian. It's just like, even someone simply understanding what I eat on a day-to-day basis was huge. So my coach understood that. The ladies that came in to really encourage me and have phone calls with me understood that. And it was like, wow, finally, someone gets it. Someone understands it. So I think that community aspect is like, there's so much value in having that. And I think it's very, very important if someone wants to be like extremely successful in a sport.
Yeah, it touches on that importance of role models, essentially, which, so we have those conversations on this podcast all the time about, you know, it's often said you can't be it without seeing it, and yeah, vice versa. But it's very, very true. And even off the top of my head, you kind of look at the discussion around, say, the England women's football team right now, which is predominantly a white team at the moment. And I know there's a lot of discussion about how do you increase that diversity in the future and trying to get that relatability to a lot of communities that might feel that they can't relate. And is that your own perspective, your own experiences of having those role models that you can look up to in your own sport? Is that kind of key? Because if you hadn't had those, would you maybe not be in the same place that you are right now?
So I think with the role model aspect, so for me personally, I find it really hard to be inspired by others. However, I can take encouragement by how they've overcome different hurdles. So the role model thing for me wasn't necessarily a big deal because my coach was a big enough inspiration. And the way he sold the sport to us was just amazing. He was like, you will get to travel the world if you do this properly. And I was like, well, I'm not traveling now. I'm only 15. So why not? Got nothing to lose. So I was already in at that point. But then I think the main thing for me was when I met people and women that were like me, there was clear kind of guidance on how to overcome certain barriers and certain hurdles, which is what I didn't have. So again, cultural context is key. If you don't know me, or especially when I was younger and I'm navigating, like, I still don't really understand myself, but if you don't know me, don't know my background, you don't know why I communicate the way I do or why I respond to things the way I do, I can come across potentially stereotypically, but not because I'm deeming myself to be stereotypical, but because we have unconscious bias. So that made it very difficult to manage professional relationships early on in the sport because I didn't get why I wasn't being understood. But once I had that kind of covering of, do you know what, Mercy, instead of doing this, do this. If you need to communicate, communicate it this way, instead of this way. That made a whole kind of difference. And I think that is where you need the kind of role model element of individuals where it's like they've been on this journey. They know how this journey works. So they know what barriers and hurdles you're going to face. And instead of you having to trip over them all the time, you've got someone that says, you know what, actually, instead of like running straight ahead, if you take a left here, you're going to avoid that hiccup and then you're going to be able to come around and get to your goal a bit quicker. I think that's the bit that's really important.
Yeah. And say something like we've touched on a lot of issues in I suppose women's sport in general throughout the series of the podcast, not just say Black communities and things like that, but whether it's the impact of social media and I suppose what society, if you want to call it that, deems as normal and deems as acceptable. The things you might see on Instagram and TikTok, for example, and how a woman is supposed to look, inverted commas, which obviously is nonsense, but it's one of those things that I think particularly if you're younger can, and if you're seeing that all the time, can be a huge, huge pressure.
Yeah.
And maybe is that something as well, because it's so often mentioned in strength sports, you know, it doesn't conform to normal.
Yeah.
again, nonsense, but is that something you maybe had to kind of balance with what society is telling people, even though it's, you know, it's misguided, and ultimately, you know, you train up your body to be the best that it can be for your sport.
Yeah, I think again, when I was young, I wasn't exposed to that many issues, just age relevant. But I think as I got older, I definitely understand why it was harder for women to get involved in the sport. Because when I started in the sport, like you could rock up to a competition and win it. Like there wasn't really anyone there. The numbers, and I think we've had excellent trends across the last couple of years, were really, really low. And I think part and part was the fact that strength always looked a certain way and it was always perceived a certain way. So you get the comments like, oh, you're a bodybuilder, or, oh, you don't actually weightlift. And it's just like, because the science behind weight training means that actually the way we look doesn't vary much unless the intensity of training varies. So you'll find that as we go up the scale of performance that people start to look a lot different there. And then you'll find because we're a weight class sport as well, there's no defined way of looking strong. So I think we've done brilliantly as a sport, well, I guess maybe not brilliantly, but close to brilliantly, about shifting the idea of what strength looks like, because strength has always been perceived as masculine. You'll see some of us on the platform who are very charismatic and aggressive, and we just command the platform, and that comes across as, oh, they're very manly, they're very aggressive. And it's kind of like, no, we're just strong. And in this context, strength looks different to different people. And if this is how I feel and perform as a strong person, that's what I do. But I think right now, especially with the women's weightlifting at the moment, I think it has just shown that people look different. Like, I personally don't look like I train as hard as I do. I'm okay with that, but I'm strong. And I think that gives people ease. I used to get quite a lot of DMs like, it's weird because you don't really expect people to DM use those sorts of things, but I understand where they're coming from. Where it's like, I don't look like what I do, but that's fine because I do what I do well. So I think we're getting very good with breaking down these barriers and these connotations. And we're also in a generation of women that don't really give a heck about an opinion on what you think my strength looks like. I think we've got a lot of like boss ladies who are kind of like, this is what I do, like take it or leave it. So I really love the kind of direction we're going in. And I think, yes, sometimes there is pressure to look aesthetically, whatever. But I think once you get past that and you look at what it is to be strong, like it's a much pleasant experience. And I think that's something that as a sport, we're doing quite well. And as individuals, like there's some key figures as well that are using their voices to talk about it. I think we're just doing brilliantly and letting people know that, look, this is my strong. So, yeah, I think we're coming a long way. I don't think we're there, but I think we're making good progress.
Yeah. Wholeheartedly back that. And speaking of boss ladies and the Women's Sport Trust is a charity, an organization that we really rate and appreciate on this podcast, and been a member of the Unlocked program. We're racking up the Unlocked members on this show. But I suppose getting involved in an organization like that and surrounding yourself with people like that, as well as the development it's given you and the skills it's given you, I imagine, has that come into it as well, just to try and help on your own for yourself as well, just trying to push that narrative and push things into a more positive place?
Yeah, I think it's helped a lot because I think, because again, we go about what by our context. Like, I thought that the body image thing was really a weightlifting thing ignorantly, because I was thinking, okay, cool, we train this hard, we don't really adapt, but we see the athletics lot who are a lot leaner and things like that. But being on the Unlocked program, you're kind of invited to a host of different women's sports kind of issues, but you're also supported with solutions. So a lot of the females are phenomenal in standing in their truth and advocating for what they're passionate about. And I think that's been really, really encouraging, because I've seen some of the projects and some of the kind of things that have been birthed out of the Unlocked program. And I'm just like, wow, when we begin to discuss what our issues are, as isolated as they might be, there's always someone that's able to help, or there's always someone that's able to support or provide a solution. So I think it's been amazing to just be around these ladies, because I think, again, community encourages you to be better. And part of that Unlocked program is that because everyone is striving for excellence, no matter what stage they were at, whether it's actively competing, retiring, moving on to career, they're actively seeking that excellence as you do as a competitive athlete, that just rubs off on you. So I think us as a group, and it's like a big old army now, are just really making waves in women's sport. And I think some of these issues, like, we're going to have some experts that come out of the Unlocked series that are going to be able to advocate and even bigger stages for solutions to these problems. So it's an exciting time, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and like I say, it really is an army of positivity and looking to change things. And every time you're in a room, whether it's a Women's Sports Trust event or people who are thinking in the same way that you are, you can just feel that energy and just feel how things are moving forwards in a much more positive light. And you kind of mentioned earlier about, you know, things are progressing, but it's not there yet. Is there anything else that we can do, people can do, I suppose society can do to try and help take those extra steps going forwards?
I think as a society, and we're seeing more brands do, I think we kind of got to create like a big mind map. So I see things in mind maps and I see, okay, we're looking at elite sport, we're looking at the barriers to elite sport, and then we're looking at the issues associated with that. And I think one of the primary issues we're finding is that the beauty standard affects sponsorship and PR opportunities and press opportunities. So regardless of how good you are, the brands are definitely adapting now. There was a big thing about, it doesn't really matter how good you are, you might not get a sponsorship. And I think they are branching out to be more body positive and all of those sorts of things there. But I think, again, as societies, if we reassess our standards, then they would have no choice but to accommodate for everyone. But I think because, again, social media and all the different pressures that we have in society today means that sometimes we're tunnel visioned on specific things, looking a certain way or achieving a certain goal or doing things this way, that we forget about the community impact. So yeah, brands are getting better at it, but I think because we have those knock-on effects of different pressures and different perceptions, like the sponsorship funding and kind of money-making route of sport is definitely being affected by it. And then you've got tokenism as well that's occurring with some of these new ventures and campaigns where it's like, oh, we'll get someone that looks different to normal people. And that will be that, but it's like there's no long-term vision, because I see it as if we make big waves, you open the door to another generation. So I remember when Nike introduced the sporting hijabs, and I just thought that was absolutely phenomenal, because now you've invited a whole demographic of individuals back into sport because you've made it more accessible by providing equipment that they need. And yes, they've now launched the plus size range. So for example, as a super heavyweight, and I'm only what, 5'6" or so, and I weigh between the 90 and 100 mark, is that I don't fit into normal size bands. So it might be that I have to go into the plus size range. So now there's more variety and there's more options available, which means, okay, now I can dress a little bit nicer when I go to the gym. It doesn't matter, but I can. But I think as a society, we have to set the culture that we want to see in sport in a way that allows sports people to be sports people and not have to worry about other things and other factors.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of without naming titles really, but you know, there are still those media titles that will give coverage to athletes primarily because of the way they look and, you know, what they post on Instagram, be it bikini pics and that sort of thing. I mean, that's kind of feel like something we can really move away from relatively soon, or
we need to move away from it really soon. Yeah, we need to, because again, different faiths, different beliefs, different individuals do different things, and what some athletes and some individuals can do, others may not want to do or be able to do, which means that they're that on that unfair playing field. So I think, again, it's just everyone has to take the individual onus in contributing to a space that is more inclusive. But yeah, without getting too personal, there's definitely still work to be done, but I think the individual onus has to be taken by every person so that we can just progressively move forward.
Yeah, like I say, it's a collective thing to essentially take those big steps forward. Like one individual can't do it by themselves, but lots of individual choices can go a long way. Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn. Kind of moving it back to sport a little bit, and obviously what it's meant for you, and it's, I always, you know, caveat this with, it's a short question but a very, very big question at the same time, in that what does your sport mean to you ultimately?
What does my sport mean to me? I think for me, yeah, it means a lot. I can't really define it, but weightlifting specifically absolutely changed my life. I started off as a footballer, big dreams of being a footballer, played for Leighton Orient. But I don't do well with team sports. So I don't like the responsibility of success being on other people. I can't control that. So weightlifting for me taught me very early on how to depend on myself, how to look after myself, how to be disciplined. And it provided me with a wealth of characteristics that have allowed me to kind of navigate through my adult life and access certain opportunities. And I think it opened my eyes, because I was one of those kids that I did every single sport. Like, you put a sport in front of me, I'm going to do it. And weightlifting was one of the first sports where I was able to measure success very easily because it's numerical. So either you're lifting more, you're not lifting more. And I think for me, that was really important for me to be able to put in all the hard work and see the fruits that come out of that. And that in turn has absolutely shaped my life. It's literally taken me across the world. It's taken me to places that I would have never been able to go to. And it has just really sparked this kind of curiosity about things. So I think for me, my sport just means a lot. I owe my sport a lot in terms of the sport, not the governing bodies or anything like that. But just to be clear, yeah, I owe my sport a lot. I owe my coach, bless his soul, a lot as well, because just the journey of this sport, and like this journey could have been way easier for me than it has been, but the roller coasters even have shown me a lot about myself. And I feel like if I hadn't have been kind of as resilient and hardworking as I'd been in sport, it would have been very hard for me to navigate certain life issues as well that came up. So the sport taught me a lot, and it really kind of contributed greatly to my development. I started at such a pivotal age, and it's just been a phenomenal experience, even though it hasn't been easy. The journey's been very hard, but I don't think I would change anything about it. I think everything happens for a reason. And yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, one of those things that, again, we often hear, and me and Will as hosts of this show can relate to. We are not elite athletes at all, but sport has ultimately given us so much in terms of our lives and people we get to speak to and our careers at the same time. And I say a perfect example of just how it can really build you as a person. And on that note, can you kind of, again, a big question, but describe or explain how you've changed as a person and what those key aspects, I suppose, sport has taught you along this journey, like you say, bumpy as it is?
I think sport has taught me a lot. Prior, I remember there's certain things that it was like my coach really drilled into us. So I used to be late a lot, as in I would say I'm training at 3. I've not left my house. And I remember my coach really drilled that into me about timekeeping, about discipline, about hard work, and just about prioritizing. So again, he was really big on education as well. So we prioritized that and we trained really hard. And I think for me, there's a lot. It's really hard to number some, like name some of the things, but I think one of the big things is the resilience part of it. I think because of the highs and lows of sport, it forces you to become resilient really quickly. So I'm a bit like a teddy bear. I've always been like that. I'm very kind of soft and a little bit sensitive, but I think sport really teaches you how to like get like really resilient and like really, really strong. And that's something I had to learn that's carried me through life. And I think the discipline as well. Discipline wavers, though. So although sport taught me discipline, I think as you get older, it's kind of like you put that really key skill of discipline somewhere else and you kind of take it a little bit away from sport. But I think the main one is resilience, the mental resilience as well. One of the big things of weightlifting, especially when you look at the performance aspects of how we compete, one of the things that I had to learn very quickly is how to deal with anxiety. And then obviously when you talk about arousal and optimal arousal and things like that, you have to be very sensitive to how you deal with anxiety. And again, it's one of those things where I've been able to carry that into the real world, because there's many anxious, like anxiety inducing experiences that can occur as an adult. And I think because we now, we're in a sport where we literally warm up and we walk out onto the platform by ourselves in front of a big crowd, and literally have to perform technique to a T, you have to learn how to deal with anxiety. So there's a few things I've just been like, wow, I don't know how I would have learned this any other way. It's really great that I have this sport that taught me all of this before life kind of chucked it at me. So yeah, those would be my main ones.
Yeah, and it always gets me thinking of kind of the accessibility, if you like, to sport, because again, it's another big societal question, if you like, it's just trying to make sport as accessible as possible, because take my sport for example, fencing, it's not cheap to get into, unfortunately. Yeah. As much as, you know, it's given me a lot of great things, and similar to you, an individual sport, you being good is solely reliant on the effort you put into it. Yeah. And you can learn a lot about life through something like that, but I suppose to sum up those kind of those accessibility questions and just making things as accessible as possible for young people, but also later in life as well, and those skills it gives you. And I suppose what was it like growing up for you? Because obviously you've been in a fortunate position of having your coach come in when you're relatively young and kind of show you the way. But I imagine there's a lot of people out there, I've seen it, I'm sure you've seen it with people around you as well, who don't get that opportunity.
Yeah. I think my coach, and there was a few coaches that did this at the time, but my coach was the only one that did that in our context, would go around to schools and facilitate weightlifting. So he had developed a program. He was quite known across East London, and he had developed a program specifically in our school, to the point where when they rebuilt the new school, they built in a weightlifting room, basically kitted out as a strength, an S&C room, like a mini-sized S&C room that you kind of see in America, because of his efforts and his work. And he came in, and because he knew the barriers we were facing, we didn't have to think of those. So we would go to the gym. I never had to worry about where I was getting my weightlifting kit from. That was something early on I never worried about, because when I went in, we had a shoe bag, and they were new shoes as well. We would go in, pick up our size, wear them for the session, put them back in the bag, so whoever else is training, they've got a pair of shoes. I was a similar size to my coach. So I remember when I came into the sport, he was like, finally someone like my size. I've got so much kit to give you. And he gave me my first pair of spandex. He gave me this really like cool, like legacy lifting suit. And there was just certain things I never had to worry about. And as we got older, we began to find out that there was talks of funding. So they had sourced funding opportunities for our club. So when we were going to competitions, we didn't have to have that burden of, oh, you need to fork out X, Y, and Z amount. It's like, okay, you need to take a permission slip to your mum and get her to sign it. Do we need to call her? Cool. All right, and we've got that, and you're now going. And they just arranged everything. So I think the accessibility for us that started in that school, in that context, they knew the barriers, so the barriers were addressed. But I think that in some cases, and I think this is why some of the coaches that go into this now struggle a bit, is that those barriers exist. So now you could go to a school and start a club, but now they don't have shoes. Oh, they're good, but we can't get them to comps. And I think that's where, like as coaches as well, we need to be a bit more forward thinking. And I think that's what my coach and our school team did really well. And that was Interborough as well. So I resided in South Hamlets, but did schooling in Hackney for a bit as well. Hackney Council had a program that young talented individuals could apply to. And that would get them like the basic things they needed to do their sport. When I was in Tower Hamlets as well, they had the same thing. And then we also had the GLL Sports Foundation, which were doing phenomenal as well, because it meant that, okay, if you needed to have your membership to go to another place, so sometimes we would need to do like conditioning, we had our membership so we could go into another gym, or we could go swimming, or we could go to the sauna. It's all of those little things that make such big impact. And I think the accessibility part is knowing where to find these things, which sometimes you don't know. But when you do find them, sharing that opportunity with other people, which meant that we had one of the kind of the easiest entry points into our sport, because certain things were just sorted. We didn't have to worry about that as 15-year-olds.
And is that something you're saying now as well? Because you've obviously got your own coaching background a little bit. It TSN Strength, I think, off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm now MB coaches.
But I suppose you see that as well. Just when you're trying to take people and guide them and take them along the next step as well, just those challenges that keep coming up.
Yeah. So my vision, like, and I think this is why I'm quite sensitive about trying to go in and work with youth prematurely. I'm big on the fact that the opportunity I got from sport, especially weightlifting, I need to give that back. That's my payback to the community. And for me, I don't want to prematurely go in and then present the kids with such a brilliant sport and brilliant opportunities, and there's barriers. So one thing that I constantly talk about, and it's something I do with Richard Robinson, my unlocked mentor as well, my activator, is kind of look at the bigger picture. How am I going to be able to facilitate bringing in young people and supporting young talent in a way that doesn't kind of tease them and then leave them alone, but actually get them locked into a sport and provide such a bolstered system around that as well. So it's a big vision, a vision I'm thinking about a lot, but I want to make sure that it's done at the right time so that the youth that I do impact are not hit with any barriers. So,
yeah. I suppose that's one big thing that we don't really address as much as maybe we should, is just, like you say, teasing them. And people often say, you know, introduce someone to one game of football or one weightlifting session, or like a taster session here and there, regardless of what sport it is, but actually keeping him in that sport. Is that kind of the big thing that ultimately we really need to address? Because it's all well and good putting on one session.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I can only imagine like I started in PGCSE. So imagine if I had that exposure, loved the sport, and then someone's like, oh, by the way, we don't do a weightlifting club here. that would be an absolute like brain fart, because you're just like, why did you show me this? You showed me that there's treasure and there's gold and there's this amazing experience that I have access to, but there's nothing beyond that. I think that's where we have to be careful with taster sessions, because I think what we don't account for when we're looking at exposure, let's expose and let's get participation, we don't bank on the fact that some people fall in love with sport instantaneously. They do it and they're like, this makes sense to me. So I think we do have to be quite long-term thinking. And I know for me, especially in my network, I'm not the only coach that is thinking of it like, oh, we want to help the youth. We're literally backs against the wall at the moment. Like, we want to help the youth so bad, but we don't want to leave them hanging. We want to have a system and a pathway that keeps them engaged in the sport as long as they want to be engaged without barriers. And I think a lot of programs don't consider that, unfortunately.
Yeah, like you say, you read all about, you know, giving taster sessions and things like that, but it's always the next step that just doesn't seem to get mentioned as much.
Yeah.
Did you kind of always have that? I don't know, is it like an air of responsibility to give back to the sport in that way that has given you so much? Well, I suppose it's just a passion, if you like, rather than a responsibility.
Yeah. So my giving back would be in a very specific context. And I think for me, and I tell this story all the time, when I started weightlifting in that PEGCSE class, I was not the only good weightlifter in that class. There was phenomenal talent that I believe that if they had continued as well, they would have similar, maybe greater success than I did. It's just that was a sport I loved. So I stuck with it. And I'm just like, across where I grew up, across the East London area, especially with individuals that are similar backgrounds to me, Afro-Caribbean, there would be phenomenal weightlifters. They just don't have the access to the sport, because the sport is isn't really an accessible sport, on the basis that if you know about it, you know about it. But unless you know about it, you don't know about it. So that would be the really big thing for me, getting young kids that look like me, similar background as me, similar like demographic and geolocation and stuff like that, getting them involved in the sport, because I know that's where the gap is, especially for diversity. And I know that other individuals from their own communities are seeing things the same way. And I think for me, it's very important that you also serve the community where you have a shared lived experience, because you have that relatability as well. And that's what my coach had brilliantly, because he was, he's a Caribbean coach. So he understood a lot about who I am as an individual, and taught me a lot about who I am as an individual as well. And I think that was just amazing. And then to see him and to see his journey, I was like, whoa, this is incredible. So I think that's exactly how, in the same way, I want to give back to the sport, in that exact same image.
Yeah, and I say wholeheartedly back that message as well, because if you put it in front of people, then it can just, like it has with you, change your life, can change plenty of other lives in the exact same way. Kind of my final part's just looking forwards and looking ahead to 2023, the rest of 2023 as we record. And so you mentioned kind of the, you know, being a self-funded athlete right now as well, and kind of balancing all of that. Is that one of the, I suppose, the key factors that you really have to juggle at the moment? And now you are in a position where thankfully you're getting to compete a lot more regularly, but that's still something that you kind of have to manage as the year goes on.
Yeah. So I've set up things in a way that works for me to be able to train. I have some fantastic partnerships and stuff, in the sense that one of the gyms I go to, which is owned by my friend Chris Speed, he allows me to train there as and when I need, and he supports me. He's part of my team, actually, and he supports me incredibly well. And we constantly have that lifestyle reflection where it's like, okay, how are we going to get you to the next big goal? And I think the main thing was prioritizing training at this stage. So looking at how I move from like a 3 day a week athlete to like 4, 5, 6 session a week athlete, and what kind of jobs and work I can take on to facilitate that. And then also, what can I do to generate additional income so that I don't have to basically be like, I'm not coming to the gym because I've got to do some work or find a job or something. So I think the priority for this year is really just building out on the opportunities I have available and competing more. With the long-term vision to be back on the international team, competing internationally as well, which is a journey, an exciting journey. I'm really excited to get back on it. But I believe this is like the first step in the kind of, we joke about and call it the comeback season, but this is the big step that we're taking in the comeback season, because I'm very realistic with my time, and I feel like this next couple of years will be my, I'm at the end of my career, respectfully, and I just want to push my body to its limits, and when it can do no more, I will sign out.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, mentioning the next goal and what the next goal is then, but is it just basically to simplify it in the extreme, I imagine, but just give it your absolute all for the next couple of years?
Yeah, that's literally it. Give it my all, push myself, get back into that medal kind of winning flow that I used to have as well, and just absolutely smash it. That's the goal, and have fun whilst doing it as well. So that's my big goal for the next couple of years. Have fun, push myself to my absolute max, and get medals in the process.
Yeah, is it one of those where, you know, see what comes, so long as you're putting maximum effort in rather than giving yourself minimum targets and results, if that makes sense?
It's less of a see what comes, to be honest. It's not as strategic just yet. We have some big goals in mind, but there's conditions that I need to kind of deal with competitively as well, and qualifiers that I need to go for. But I think this next 2 months will definitely identify what my next big thing is. So my focus across my next three comps is a particular qualifier. And once that is achieved, looking for the next step. So I'm taking it step by step, because I find that sometimes if you're too forward thinking, you can experience disappointment when you don't get there. So I'm just taking it step by step, one comp at a time. And then from there, me and my team will be able to be like, okay, it's go time. This is now the goal. And this is what we're doing. And I think then everyone's going to see a big ramp up in my efforts as well, because I'd have no choice but to be the best. So certain, I guess, lifestyle things will take a hit, because training will take a bigger priority.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'll finish on a message of positivity, if you like. And just, I suppose, for people, kids, anyone really in a community like you grew up in, similar kind of backgrounds, and obviously seeing you and what you've managed to accomplish, what would be your message to those people who might be looking for that, whatever it might be, whether it's a sport, whether it's a job, some path in their life, and what your message would be? Classically, my voice goes as I say that. But what your message would be to those people who want to take that next step?
My message would be bet on yourself, and focus on yourself. I think in the early stages of sport, you can get really, really hung up on what everyone else is doing and how their competitions are going and whatnot. And I think it's really, really important to dial in your focus to make it like you-centric. So my advice would be bet on yourself and focus on yourself, because that's the only factor you have control over. Something I wish I learned a little bit sooner. But once you can do that, it changes the game. And you can see when an athlete has that, where it's kind of like, I don't care what's going on in this room. I don't care what this person's doing. I've got me. And that is what me and Richard call a killer mindset, which is what I'm working on getting back, is that you go in the room, you're focused, and you get it done.
Yeah. And so it opens up so many doors off the back of that in all walks of life as well. So
exactly.
Not often I've mentioned a killer mindset on here, but it definitely, I think, proof is
obviously
in the
pudding. It means, just PS guys, don't kill anyone.
Yeah,
but just means your focus is lasered.
Exactly, not that kind of killer mindset, but the message the message is still there, the determination. Yeah. Is just what it can provide to people, and having that so focused mindset. Thank you so much, Mercy, for coming onto the podcast.
No worries.
It's stuff like that, and just that giving back and trying to push things into such a great position. As I often say, we are biased, and we wouldn't have set up a sports podcast if we didn't like sport and what it can do for people. But it's just people like yourself and that work that goes off and is so often unseen and unheard and really should be shouted about a lot more. That can do so much for individual people and just pushing communities and society into a much better place. And obviously seeing something like women's sport moving into a positive trajectory as well is always a positive too. So best of luck for 2023 as well. Hope that comeback goes incredibly well for you. No doubt it will, with the amount of effort you put in. But look forward to seeing what you're doing over the next couple of years.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me as well. It's been amazing.
A huge thank you to Mercy for coming onto the podcast and for sharing her story and her passion for giving back. As I mentioned, it's incredibly admirable, and for every person that does that, then things will only move in a positive way. If you enjoyed the podcast, please hit subscribe on the podcast player of your choice, and of course share on social media. That's how a show like ours can grow and reach more people. You can also give us a follow on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and on Instagram. All of our handles are at SportSpielPod. That is it for this episode, listeners, and indeed this winter series of SportSpiel. We've brought you 9 episodes in 9 weeks. If you missed any of our athlete stories, you can find them all on our website, on our YouTube, and of course on the podcast player that you use, be it Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We'll be taking a wee break on the show, but we will be back with another series of episodes in the near future. Keep tabs on our socials to see all of that, and we are of course looking forward to our return. Thank you as ever, listeners, for tuning in and sticking with the show. Me and Will hugely appreciate it, and you'll be hearing from us very soon.